He's walking and breathing. He is connected to my body as much as I am, if not more so. So why not give him my body?
Let's thank our brother. That's just one story. And there are stories all over the world. There are stories in your pews of men and women like Tim and me who struggle with same-sex attraction, who view same-sex attraction as a struggle. Men and women in your midst who identify as gay and lesbian, who are longing for community within the body of Christ, to come to know God in a deeper, more intimate way, and let Him work on those places that need profound healing in us. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back. If you didn't get a white card for questions and you have a burning question, we've got more cards up here. Write your questions. I'll tell you what, let's just leave those, if you would, leave those on the table over here, and we'll pick those up in this last session, and Tim and I will respond to your questions. If you don't have questions, we'll come up with questions for you. But we'd much rather address those things that you want. Let's take a short break. Let's take a 10-minute break. What time do I have? I have 3:38. Let's try to be back in here by 10 till 4. 10 till 4, and I think we've got another 30, 40 minutes after that. We'll see you then.
I tell you, I just really appreciate both of you. Honestly, I really appreciate, as you said earlier, about the smooth change in your saying. And you're talking about the patience and the other things. We don't look at those things as things that we need to change, yet they do. And so, why do we view these other things as so much worse?
Churches in the area to get one more of that as well. I have some friends that are resident of this. So, boy, stay close.
The reason I came to this class is because I'm for the first time in my life, I got working out in high school. And she said, I didn't copy you. I think that, you know, she was like, I don't know if I have you.
Did you say you went to Sunset?
Yes.
A big struggle going on in that family because his
sister was young and lost a sister. So I felt like the love just left.
And now Sean's big thing is that
I can relate to him a lot because I don't
have anything to do with his family as long as he's able to do with them. That is a big area. Now, back in 93, I went back to school to get my bachelor's
in science. I guess I was wondering a little bit about some of
our bachelor's of science. And
and I did in my philosophy class. I developed voices.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then I was on an article. Actually, took that thesis to the Donald home, and he condensed it and put it into the stuff on the
Watch, did you get one of these cards?
Okay.
Do you want to type one to him?
And we've got a book.
But my big thing is
that there are other materials in mind
that
I know that there's Exodus and there's a couple of other things, but I don't think we have anything. And it's an opportunity to explore some of the
issues.
There's two that I'm aware of. Now, Sally may know more.
How do I develop relationships?
But I guess, first of all, I know that I can walk this out.
As far as their
ideas,
that's going to be also
how they
study on our Facebook page.
I'd love it to that picture.
It's going to be there
because right now it's not. It's anger.
It's like a whole week.
It's almost a retaliation. It's a show. And his wife with their two little
think about it.
Sure about it. Robin Grancy.
Did you know Sean Palmer?
And his ultimatum to that red cancer with them is to stop
seeing. Yeah. I grew up in instrumental churches.
So anyway, I think you have
quite a few. Yes, we do.
I need to
out that door all the way to
the
front. We'll be there.
It just wasn't about it.
Because right now I just run those windows.
Yeah, we'll be there all day.
There with Rick. So I was going to really listen to you. I didn't realize that you guys were going.
I'm getting more
time to yourself. So I just have this is like you said something.
Oh, his name sounds familiar. It's been so long ago.
And I understand. And I just can't remember. I know that my son was younger and graduated from high school in 97. I think Sean was graduated from high school in 98.
So he was born
in the sunset.
Well, we're so connected now.
That's as close as I can get.
All right, I'll pick up.
You don't thank you.
Okay.
Call me.
Okay.
Thank you. I mean, if you've just got it.
I love you.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you so much. It is so much appreciated.
Tell me your name. Okay, have you filled one of these out, too? I'm going to talk about this when we start. This one gets you on our email.
I've got
it. So just fill that out and make sure I get that back.
Okay.
And then if he wants to be, he can sign up on the website. He can get as involved as he wants. He's going to talk to me. The man that I get counseled with, he's counseling with this guy.
I was in
the mind, and I don't know anybody.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I wish I'd had you.
But I feel so helpless.
God's using you.
I'm grateful.
What's he called? Leaving Saturday. Love to have you.
Yeah. Sally's my driver.
I wish you
had
where you
stay at the Hyatt.
Okay. Well, if it's simply a matter of getting home from there, I can do that.
Okay.
So if you want to come, I'll be glad to meet you.
Okay.
Yeah. But either way, and I'm continuing to speak to you, so this may just take it out of here. You know, sometimes share
it. That is probably, I know, I had all these notes up
for some months. It's interesting. I wonder in my life, I'm like, I believe everything is happening, but do I, I've been once in a while, there's a broader awareness that I'm like, well, I didn't believe it back then, but I didn't, you know what I mean? So I'm like, what don't I know yet? Yeah. Which is a good thing, it's not a bad thing, it's a way of how to do it.
It's good to meet you personally. Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
And I learn sometimes that that's not always true. But, you know, sometimes you need it in some moment.
That's right.
And turn on
money. That's right.
So we can do that.
And sometimes you want to know that you're just there. But anyway, let's do that.
It was just so precious.
Yeah, it was really
ourselves is really, really hard. Things work out wonderful. But I mean, I thank the goodness of my life.
But you know what?
I thought that was my phone going off.
I'm doing it again. It's more important than anything. And that was so
deceiving.
All right, get your mic on. Get your mic on. It's time to go. All right, do we have questions? Let's see if we've got questions over here. We've got some questions. Yay. If we have more, I'll ask you to slip those over to the table, or we'll... we'll pick those up from you. Be glad to do that. I want to leave this information up here for you. Wow, that got blurry. Is it blurry to y'all, or did something happen to me? Okay. Let's see about this. There we go. Had me worried there for a while. Everyone should have one of these cards. If you got one of these, that will add you to our email newsletter list. If you have one of those, just leave it on the end row. Pass it down. If we need some more, let's pass those around. Anybody over here need? That will add you to our email newsletter list. If you don't want snail mail, and I understand that, you can check that box, but I don't send a lot of things out. We're a poor nonprofit, and so I don't do a lot of mailings except at the end of the year. Tim, shall we sit?
Okay.
Let's sit. Wow, those chairs are heavy. I'm hoping that if these questions spur more questions for you, that you'll feel free to ask, and this can just become a conversation, so that we'll feel free to just ask anything. Let me see what we've got here.
This on. Okay. I have a lot of gay friends, and one of the things that I did not do is disown them. I didn't disown them, and I don't bring up any subjects that would like this, because talking about what we see on TV is not the answer. I have a lot of gay friends, and that. They'll come to town to Nashville, and they're like, "Hey Tim, we're coming to town. Show us a good time." And I know what that means. That means, "Hey, take us out to the bars." And I remember, what did I do? You know, here I am trying to overcome something, and I'm being asked to do something that I may make me stumble. So I called a friend up, and I told him, "I need some wisdom. So I don't want to say I don't do that anymore, Cliff." So I ended up texting. I said, "Well, I don't drink as much as I used to." And I would love to have lunch with you tomorrow. And he said, okay, we're getting in late anyway, so yeah, let's have lunch. So we went and had lunch, and then that evening they were hanging out at their place, so I went and bought them some gifts, some souvenirs from Nashville, and took it to their place and presented it to them. And they were having the drinks, and it was kind of like they started talking about their workout program. And then I was like, well, I haven't been working out like I used to, but I'll tell you what I have been doing. I've been doing a lot of spiritual exercises. And we were able to have a discussion of Christ as how he meditated and how he prayed and how he lived according to the Spirit, God living in him. And it was very comforting. Now, providence of God, or however you want to call it, there's this guy at my church whose son is in the lifestyle. And we didn't know how there would be a time for us to meet him to meet. This friend that I knew also was his friend. And the next time he came to town, he asked me to go to dinner. And he said, I'll have another friend in Nashville. And it ended up being this guy's son. And so that would have been a door closed for me. So I'm sorry I went off on the question, but the question is, what do I do about this? I don't talk about it. I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. Right. That's right. That's right. I'm praying. Well, I would. Okay. I believe that's answered by action. I still struggle. I still have the temptation. It's not like, I mean, I don't feel like it's needed for me to say, oh, I don't do that anymore. I don't live that way. Even if I said that, they're like, okay, he's in denial, So I'm wanting Christ to live in me and allow him to live out his life out again through me and see what Christ does through me and how he treats them special. So this, I want them to see my life change because it shows. They knew my life before. They see something else. What is that? It's not about, oh, I don't live that anymore. It's about who I know now. It's about Christ. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's why I didn't go. I mean.
They did understand that the most important is going out and partying.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's why I didn't go.
Well,
I mean.
My best friend worked that we had a few years of speaking with him, and he interpreted it as me rejecting him as a friend. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to debate, I didn't want to get in an uncomfortable conversation. No. It was very difficult. And I thought I was being gentle. He interpreted it as rejection, as any other Christian preacher would. Mm-hmm. So when he tried to take his life a second time, and I got that call, it took a lot of guilt. And so after that, I wasn't going around saying, it's wrong for you to do that way, or shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. The struggle with how to communicate, hey, I still love him there. We're still friends. My son's no doubt. I wanted him to be clear that whatever questions I had about his life, struggles, his desires, doesn't mean I don't love him. He's not welcome in my home. My kids are allowed to go see him. And that's kind of the thing. They don't want me to pay. Mm-hmm. I was trying to be gentle. But you totally interpreted it because I was a Christian preacher.
Yeah, and sadly, that's the perception that you may be familiar with the book Unchristian that came out from David Kinnaman and Gabe Lyons did a research project. It was published in 2009 where they surveyed 16 to 29-year-olds and their perceptions of Christians. They came up with the top 10 descriptors, and the number one descriptor of Christianity among 16 to 29-year-olds outside of the church was anti-homosexual. There is an automatic perception. It comes from the world's view of Christianity being represented by people like Jerry Falwell, who made the statement in 2001 when the Twin Towers fell, that the reason the Twin Towers fell was because there were homosexuals in the building. Okay, that was broadcast over and over and over and over repeatedly on CNN, and people had a field day with that. Meanwhile, we are the body of Christ, and we do not believe that statement. We do not go along with that statement. We know that that statement is not what God would have us say to people, and yet we said nothing in response. We did nothing to counter that statement. We did nothing to show a different perspective. We were silent. And sometimes in our silence has reflected an apathy that's not accurate either, because I think inside there is turmoil over what do I do, what do I say, how do I respond in love. But we've not broken out of our comfort zone like you have today to say, I have got to learn more about this so that I can respond, because my kids are growing up having Ellen DeGeneres teach them what it means to be a woman. But you know what? There are lots of other things on television that we allow people to teach what denotes masculinity and femininity too, and we don't say one word about that either. Is it, you know, is it effective to boycott programs? Well, if I had young children, then I believe that I would, and I would be very careful about what they watch, because I'm here to tell you that when I tell my story at Camp David and I share some of the factors that I believe impacted me and my perception of women and relationships between men and women, many of those factors came from television. I'm an only child, and I watched a lot of it. You know, it's funny that we've seen television go from Andy Griffith and I Love Lucy, where Lucy and Ricky slept in separate beds. We could talk all day about that. But how it has evolved now to where, you know, shows denote men and women having sex together outside of marriage all the time. And we didn't mention that. You think Satan has not had a field day with us? But folks, the way to counter that is not to get up in arms and preach. Although there's a call for that too. But living out a different picture of what family is supposed to be, what gender is supposed to be, what sexuality is supposed to be, and living in relationship. God bless you for having your kids call him Uncle Edward and not taking that away. Because it is only in relationship with you that he can remember who he really is. And whether or not that will happen, I don't know. But I know it can't happen apart from that. So God bless you for loving your friend. That's what this is going to take in order for us to respond. You know, the most powerful thing I see about Jesus over and over and over and over is that he did not feel the need to instantly express what he believed and what he thought and what he knew to be true from his father. He didn't have to say it to the woman at the well. He just simply asked her for a drink. And that was radical, because Jews don't drink from the same dishes as Samaritans. Especially a Samaritan man engaging in conversation with a Samaritan woman. Especially a Samaritan woman who had already had five husbands and she's living and sleeping with a man she's not married to. Now that's how my Lord interacted with people. He didn't go on and on about how evil the culture was and how we must fight against it and boycott Disney. He met people where they were. And he loved them where they were. And after engaging her in conversation, remember the disciples' response when they came back? What is he doing talking about? They noticed the difference. They noticed how radical that was. No wonder she couldn't go back to the village and keep her mouth shut. she couldn't. Neither can I. He's the reason that we do. And he's how we do. He's how we respond. And that's different from some of the things that I grew up with, because I fight constantly this desire to tell my friends, well, you know, there is another way to look at that, but why did, but, and I want to tell them. I want to tell them. And yet we have allowed our silence to create a culture in which we must now navigate. We have to live within what we have created. And it takes time and patience, and it's not going to happen overnight. And the thing I've come to is that I'm the one who feels better for a little bit when I say what I believe. When I say what I think, I feel better. I've done my job. I've quoted scripture. I've made sure that the person knows where I stand. But I may have closed the door when I was the only person who could have been Jesus in that person's life. Shall we move on to question two? This is kind of related. I think we're on the same track here. How do you address the idea that same-sex attraction is not even wrong? I'm going to go with this. I'm going to roll.
Okay.
You'll be thinking what you want to add in. I think we have two responses. We can say, well, it's just too late. They just, you know, we've done this and there's not anything we can do about it now. Or we can say, okay, we have helped create this. Our silence has created this. And the enemy has had a field day with the ugly things that have been said. And so there's a pendulum swing back now. Even among Christians sometimes, to think that we've been so hateful at times with things that have been said, that now the only compassionate response is to say, well, this is okay. This is just who some people are, and some people are different, and we shouldn't discriminate. Well, there's always a kernel of truth in the enemy's lies. That's how we buy into them. That's how he confuses us. The truth is, this is not how God calls us to live. The truth is that this struggle comes from such deep confusion about identity that to not address that in someone's life is cruel, because it robs us of really and truly knowing who we are. And who we are in Christ. That is so complex that we don't even need to get into all of that today. But just know that this struggle is not just about stopping behavior. It's not just about making sure people don't have sex in this particular way. This is an issue of identity. Those feelings of attraction grew out of a distorted image of myself, not seeing myself as God called me to. That means that I grew up living out of a lie about my worth, about my value, about my ability to be feminine, my ability to live out my life as a woman. What can be good about living out of a lie? It's the same thing for a woman with an eating disorder who grows up believing she's never pretty enough, skinny enough, beautiful enough, good enough. Or a little boy believing that he doesn't have what it takes to be a man. Those are lies of Satan. We wouldn't think of allowing our children to grow up believing those lies and living that out and then telling them, well, whatever you found that makes you feel better about yourself, just go ahead and do that. That's easier And it's certainly easier if you are forced to do that alone. So how do you take someone who has already come to that place of that distorted self-image and has found that, this makes me feel better, and all of the world says this is okay, this is just who God created me to be. If I'll just live that out, I'll feel better. And it's only because those evil Christians discriminate against me and say hurtful things and make me feel bad about myself. That's why I feel bad. So I'll just live this out. When you come in contact with someone who has come to that place, we can't continue to respond as we've responded before and expect to get a positive result.
You just ask God to pray and you ignore it. In those stages, it is the right time to approach it. You have not already made that choice.
That is a fantastic question. And that's the question that we have to keep asking. And the earlier we can ask that in a child's life, the better. What if someone had come to Tim when he was 13? When I was 13, and said, what does it mean to you to be masculine? Tell me what you think it means to be a man. What if an older brother, what if his dad, what if an older man at his church had come and said, let's go get a Coke and sat down and started talking about that. Let me take you out here and let's play catch. And in the course of playing catch, or whatever it is that he wants to do, let's talk about that and what that means. Those are questions that you can start to ask when I'm 20, 21, 22, and you think that someone may have already embrace a gay identity. That becomes a little more difficult. But you can only know when and how to ask that out of relationship. You can't go up and ask someone off the street. Because if you're not right, you've done two things. At the very least, you've been rude, but at the worst, you've planted an idea of a label. And so we don't go there. I would pray fervently for God to give you direction as to when you can ask that question, because the question does need to be asked. I think the most powerful thing we can do in response to this question and yours, and that's to ask, tell me what it's been like for you. Tell me how you got here. So the person has embraced a gay identity. How did you get there? If it's someone that you know has grown up in church, someone who has grown up in a Christian home, family, and all of a sudden, you know, you find out that they have embraced a gay identity, instead of responding, well, you know what the Bible says about that. I don't mean to make light of that. Please don't misunderstand me, because I know that that's the answer. But I also know that in working with people and in really meeting people where they are, sometimes we have to begin over here at point X instead of point A. And the most powerful thing we can give is to listen and to say, tell me what that was like for you. What was it like for you growing up? How did you get here? And what was hard for you? I can imagine that must have been so incredibly hard for you. Tell me about that. Think about what that would do for you if someone did that with you in some of the pains that you've had in your life. And someone takes time and really wants sincerely to hear, not to be ready, but, well, yeah, but you know, in Romans it says, But to just listen with the compassion of Christ is powerful. Yeah.
When you're talking to somebody that struggles with that attraction, is there any value in, as you find out kind of some of the things that kind of began the process, like you guys talked about relationships with your parents and different things, is there any value in going and trying to go back into that relationship and allowing them to bring that person in to try to create healing, or is it better for them to try to deal with it first and then deal with the person or the situation or the circumstances that kind of caused it to kind of help you along in the first place? Do you confront that feeling, or do you leave it alone?
I can speak from my own experience to that. And granted, I was working with someone who is the most spirit-led counselor I know, David Lewis. And so he guided that process. And it was probably about 9 months before I was ever able to confess what I was struggling with to my parents. I confessed that to my mother. And she, in turn, told my father, and they both, within about 6 months, entered into that process of counseling with me. They went on their own. My father went to counseling by himself. My dad and I went through counseling. We had a lot of counseling. We needed a safe place to talk through some things. I mean, there had been decades of pain and problems within families, and there's not a family out there that doesn't have stuff to contend with. The ideal situation, I believe, is to have everybody be a part of that, because I didn't just turn out like this. We're products of a family system and biology and a host of other things that we watch on TV, that we overhear friends say, that we read on billboards. All of that interacts. But if I can impact that family system out of which I grew, then that's ideal. But not everybody is there. I encounter parents all the time who will say, well, that's not my problem. He did that on his own. He can just tend to that on his own. And so, with God's help, we do. You know, regardless of how my parents respond, I am called to be who God created me to be. But I am blessed beyond belief that my mom and dad entered into that with me. And so if you can pray that happens, fantastic.
I was just thinking about the woman at the well when you said going, where you start. Jesus didn't, he knew she was living with a man she wasn't married to, and had been married 5 times. But when he sat down with her, he didn't say, well, let's address this immorality in your life. And he actually never did say that to her. He started at the right place, as he always does, and then he wound up not mentioning it because he was, maybe bring guilt on her, but just to let her know that he knows all things and she can trust him.
Exactly.
One thing that he did also is he had a need. And he was asking her to provide that need for him. So when we come to people, if we have a need, let's ask them, hey, can you help me here? You know, and then they feel important.
Our last question today is, what is the best thing, reaction, for a parent to do or have for a young adult, it says gay child, who does not desire change or feels his lifestyle is wrong? He was raised in the Church of Christ, but has left. What's the best thing or reaction for a parent to do or have for a young adult gay child who doesn't desire change but feels his lifestyle is wrong? Tim, I think you addressed that beautifully in what you shared. Do you want to share any more about that?
Well, the way I grew up,
this was my problem. I became a thinker. The way I was molded and shaped, I withdrew to myself, and I was like, okay, I'm going to learn things on my own, and I'm gonna figure things out on my own. So I did that with everything, and then when this came about, I was like, okay, I'm going to figure this out on my own. And so I went to work on it, and that lasted a long time. And if I needed help, I would ask for it. And if someone tried to impose something, I'd be like, what are you doing here? I've got my structure. I'm approaching it this way. Don't disturb that. And the thing is the Lord was with me through all that. And He loved me. And His grace was there with me. And He knew the right time, the right place. Because it's more important. God's more interested in us knowing that it's 100% Him and 0% us. And when we're trying to solve our own problems, we may not get the best results. It's when we stop. And as a parent, for a son like this, is to understand the grace of God. And then I'll give you comfort. And to understand the love of God and how He works in your life and how Christ can mother your child, how Christ can father your child through you if you have a surrendered life.
Sure.
I'm going to stand up to do it. I think I can answer this question. I am the parent of two children who were raised in the church and don't believe they are living a wrong lifestyle. What I have taught them is that they were raised to know the truth. They know how I feel. They are still my child, and I still love them very much. And we live day to day with that thought.
Nothing separates us from the love of Christ.
What do you do for a child, like I have a nephew that's gay? What do you do for a child when they try to pull away from the family, to separate themselves from, like, his parents? Do you? Because I know they have really struggled with this, and they don't know whether to, you know, at times just totally reach out or to let him be on his own son. I mean, how do you, and he's 23. What do you do as far as that type of situation?
Well, when I told my parents, I felt that pull. Like, I felt like I was willing to pull away from them. Because I was feeling, in my mind, I'm thinking, they're judging me. They didn't even know that I struggled with them. But in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm judging them, thinking that they're judging me. And I felt that pull. I mean, there's times in my life I wanted to run away. Oh, I'll go out to California and tell somebody. Let them suffer, you know. Well, when I felt that sense in my journey, I was like, God, I trust you. You knew what you were doing, and you let me let them suffer. And Lord, I need to share this with them. And I pray that you prepare them for such a time as this. And so I went, and I mean, it took all the energy I could to tell them. And their response was, they wanted to ask me questions, but I was like, I don't want to answer questions. I immediately came back home. And my mom, it was like 3 months later, my mom started sending me emails of all the different ministries, what she had learned over the past 3 months, because she went to digging, researching, trying to figure out what to tell me. And my response to that was immediately like, you don't want to accept that your son's gay.
So
and then when I sent that email to her, she backed off. And but I'll tell you, every time I saw them, and every time I called them, they always told me they loved me. And the Lord is much more powerful than we are. And he constantly pursues and chases after.
Well, I think that that's what she said. Let Jesus mother and father your child. I mean, to me, that's just the perfect statement.
Well, and I'm thinking of Luke 15. I'm thinking of the prodigal son coming back to a father who let him go. You know, there is a developmental aspect to our leaving that is extremely critical here, especially for those of us who experience same-sex attraction. There, you know, all of our stories are different, so there are no cookie-cutter answers here like we're looking for. But developmentally, sometimes there has been an over-attachment. And sometimes there needs to be some independence. Sometimes is that mixed in with some rebellion too? How much is what? We don't know. But the point of Luke 15 is he let him go. He let him go, but he was ready to receive him. And while he was still a long way off, he ran out to meet him. My favorite verse in scripture, right back here and then up here.
Our question is in the middle of this town, or I'm in this whole town of Texas. It's a young man who's raised for Christ, Hispanic. And of course, Hispanic culture is still in our area. That's just a disgrace when we preach the Bible.
Exactly.
All of his brothers and family are all macho, you know, baseball. I mean, father's a sheriff deputy. So this whole stigma. He has gone to a destructive cycle, of course, with his drinking and partying and houses about sexual. I've come in there as a new guy, and so the family's trying to get me to convert him, trying to, worry. In the meantime, I'm worried about his family and how they pretty much live a very skank heterosexual life. I mean, they've got illegitimate children out of town, but they're trying to teach this. I mean, so two things I'm asking is, number one, I want to talk to Paul. He's focused on getting his son straight. And I had to come out and say, look, I don't want to talk to him about that right now. I want to talk to him about worrying about the fact that he could be laying out dead on a weekend after he binges his posts on Facebook. I want to just focus on the fact that he came over to our house, he gives me hugs. I mean, I made a conscious effort publicly. If I saw him, he pulled away from me. I don't want to get anybody else, but look, if he's got two brothers, I mean, just trying, number one, you know that he's no different for us. Number two, with his cousins that I take Bible classes and stuff, just a couple weeks ago when we got in the car, and I went down Kit Kats, I saw my son's friends, and he said, hey, James, you see that guy in the States? Yes. He brought disgrace on our family. He's the one that got in the pit with my cousin and did all that. I said, how is he more disgrace in your home when your cousin's sleeping around? Why are they different? And I know this kid's a minor, but I mean, he's already been exposed to this. So that's my other question. Is that too? I don't want to sound like I'm just saying it's all okay, but I really want to break down this focus on just the whole, it's like it's all they can think about. And they're destroying their lives like right now.
Exactly.
Is that enable?
You keep on doing what you're doing, and that is difficult. But to receive a young man where he is, and to help his family realize that this is a much broader mentality. Same-sex attraction is a symptom of deeper stuff going on, and in a family system that has that kind of brokenness. Of course, you got to address those things first. First and foremost, keep him alive. Keep him alive and show him that he is loved. It's Christ's love that compels us. And you keep on doing what you're doing. Yeah, thank you. Cut up your tongue.
I was just going to say what I was going to say, that my focus, I know this session is about same-sex attraction. often when we have loved ones that are from ourselves struggling with, that becomes the primary focus. And really, as Christians, it's neither here nor there what somebody else thinks or knows about what we might perceive as their big sin. But this whole relationship thing, we say it, but that's a hard thing, really, to develop relationship with someone in such a way that they are free to come to you to talk, you can go to them to talk. We see that in all different aspects of our lives. And really when young folks who've been struggling with this, when they, you know, there's some developmentally appropriate things that sound like you too. You know, they're 23, 22, 24. I mean, whether they're dealing with same-sex attraction or not, the seeking for independence is very, very strong at that time, and it's a part of it. But sometimes when we're really hyper-vigilant because we're concerned about same-sex attraction, it's always because of same-sex attraction. Or anything else they do, always because of same-sex attraction. You know, they had an accident with same-sex attraction, you know, or whatever. That puts us in danger when we judge. We have allowed Satan to define Christianity for us by telling us that this is what it's supposed to be. That book that you talked about, Unchristian. You know, we're supposed to be homophobic. We are also supposed to be a bunch of other things. I'm going to talk about it in this session. I talked about it this morning. We're racist. You know, we're not supposed to be, I mean, we're supposed to be sexist. We're supposed to be all these things because Satan has told us that that's what Christianity is. And we have got to reclaim that. If we're followers of the way, we need to identify who's the way. And my understanding is the way is Jesus. So if we follow Jesus, all this conversation about what did we tell somebody who's you know, gay or whatever, it's not for us to tell them anything. It's for us to show them, like Tim said, it's about the way we live. And if Jesus is living through us, that's who they're encountering, is Jesus. That's all of it.
And you may have so much fears. I mean, there's times I walk into situations I don't know. But one thing I do, you're God, here's my body. And he does. He does.
You know, the whole ministry of Centerpiece, the name Centerpiece, is built on the truth that Jesus invites us all to the table. That he is the centerpiece of our existence. Without him at the center of our lives, there is no peace. It's there in that fellowship with him at table that we are transformed. Whatever our struggles are, we all get to come to the table. No matter where we are in our thinking, whether we get that there's a bunch of stuff in us that God wants to make different, or whether we don't see it at all, we still get to come to the table. But if I'm not allowed to come to the table, I don't ever get to be him. I don't ever get to eat with you, get to know you, and live life with you. That's what he intended the body to be about. So, as you go back home and you encounter loved ones who happen to struggle with a lot of things, among which is same-sex attraction, love with the love of Jesus, and listen. Take all the time in the world to listen. It will be amazing to you how in turn then I want to know what you think about these two. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.